This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Fair or not, some Americans still perceive college fraternity life based on the 1978 movie Animal House.
We might as well have a good time.
Toga, 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 toga.
The movie was loosely based on one writer's real-life fraternity experience at Dartmouth College. And while much has changed at the Ivy League school, fraternities there do still get into trouble, making for some especially unflattering headlines last year about rowdy parties, hazing, even a fire. But at least Dartmouth can take comfort in knowing it's far from alone. Greek organizations nationwide have come under tough scrutiny in recent years because of similar incidents. Still, fraternities and sororities remain popular, and those involved in them say the benefits far outweigh any negatives, giving students a sense of belonging, lifelong friendships, promoting charity and community service, all attributes overlooked with each sensational headline. Today in The Exchange, grading Greek life on campus. Were you involved in a sorority or a fraternity? What were the pluses or minuses? And if you avoided the Greek system, what's your opinion? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Georgiana Martin, editor of The Oracle, research journal of the Association of Fraternity and Sorority Advisors. Georgiana is also an assistant professor of Student Affairs Administration and Higher Education at the University of Southern Mississippi. By the way, she's a sorority member herself. Georgiana Martin, great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us, Don Forsyth, a social and personality psychologist and a professor at the University of Richmond's Jepson School of Leadership. He's done extensive research on group dynamics created by the fraternity and sorority membership. And Don, it's really good to have you too. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for asking me to join you today.
Well, to both of you, but Georgiana, you first, I think. How popular is Greek life on campus these days, not just at University of Southern Mississippi, but nationwide?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think it certainly depends geographically, and it depends on the campus, right? A lot of smaller colleges, fraternity sorority life tends to be more popular, perhaps because of limited opportunities, perhaps just because of campus culture. But I do think we've seen sort of a rising increase, slowly, a slow increase in terms of popularity with students.
So can you say globally, Georgiana, that, roughly 10% of students or 20% of students nationwide, or is it so different from campus to campus that you really can't say?
Nationwide, I believe the average hovers right around 12 to 13%. Mm-hmm. But there are plenty of campuses, particularly small colleges, where that average hovers around 40%.
Don, what are you seeing on your own campus and around the country in terms of how popular fraternities and sororities are these days?
I agree with Georgiana. It really depends on the place you're located. There are some campuses, and by small, I would say 2,000 to 3,000 student campuses. They could be as much as 90% of the students will be involved in Greek life.
90%? Wow.
Up to 90%. And there's others, larger state universities, where it's a much smaller segment of the campus. So if you're at a large 40,000 student campus like Ohio State or Florida State, the proportion will be much smaller. The Greek life won't run the social life of the students in those kinds of places.
Well, and Georgiana touched on this, but I'd like your thoughts too, John. What is it that draws students more to Greek life on some campuses than others?
Well, to empathize with students who are first joining a college, a university, they're in a brand new place. In some cases, they don't know anyone on campus. So it's the Greek system has emerged to help people organize their social lives. These are people who are used to being very closely connected to other people their age. They don't know anybody. Wouldn't it be great to go to a place where they organize that for you? They help you make social contacts. And so it meets a pretty strong social need for students to organize and reduce their anxieties about being in a new place.
Especially when they first arrive. Although, Georgiana, there has been some question about whether freshman year or sophomore year is better. Some debate, Georgiana, about, you know, maybe it's better to wait till sophomore year when you're a little more mature. I wonder what your take is on that.
Sure. And the research is actually varied on this. So there's some inconsistency there. Some studies have suggested that waiting then results in higher GPAs for students who eventually join. And some research has said, doesn't really make that much of a difference. You know, like Don said, in that difficult transition period for a lot of students, having an intact group to provide social outlets and to organize it for them is something that really helps that transition. And so it really depends.
Depends on the student, depends on probably the individual fraternity or sorority.
Absolutely. And there's so much variance across fraternities and sororities. They each are so different. They each take on a life of their own.
You know, it's interesting, and I can kind of see both sides of this, Don, that in a way you just arrive, you don't know anybody, and as both of you said, it helps a young person feel grounded when they first arrive. On the other hand, there has been some research that shows if you wait and you're a little more mature, you don't get involved so easily in some of those negative behaviors. And the example everybody thinks about, Don, and I know you're familiar with this, is the freshman out in California a couple years back who joined right off the bat and was involved in an initiation that involved a lot of alcohol, and he died. So I just wonder what your thoughts are about this big debate over first year, second year.
Well, at our university, we do not allow rushing in the very first semester, so it is delayed to the second semester, and that seems to have a positive impact. I mean, it was called rush for a reason. Rush, it's time-based. You push people into making a decision, maybe prematurely. They don't call it rush anymore. They call it, you know, new member education instead of rush.
Really? That's a change I hadn't heard about.
Sort of a euphemism, I suppose. But
right.
It helps students find their feet at the campus without necessarily turning to Greek life. If they can be involved in some other activity, if they can bond with their roommate, for example, or their suite mates, if they can be involved in theater, if they can be involved in orchestra or some other collective activity which will meet their need to create strong social bonds with others, they may not need to turn to a sorority or a fraternity. So slowing things down would help a great bit. You raise the question, you know, a whole separate question about the dangers of the initial, hazing is the word typically used, where students have to go through some sort of initiation process. And to me, that's just a separate matter altogether.
It needs to be organized.
We need to reduce the extent to which these groups haze their new students.
I want to get the stories and comments and questions from our listeners. And then, yes, I do want to ask you about that whole hazing issue, initiation issue, and how it's changed. The number for you to join us with your comments, personal experiences with fraternities and sororities on college campuses is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All one word. Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. So let's get into some of this stuff that you mentioned, Don. And Georgiana, to you first, please. Just broadly, how would you say the Greek life experience is different today than it was perhaps 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ago, when many of our listeners were on college campuses? How would you say it's different?
Sure. Well, Don sort of mentioned this shift in terminology from rush, and the new term that is often used is recruitment, new member recruitment. And once an individual decides to join an organization, through that recruitment process, they go through new member education, right, which is what Don was alluding to. And that process in and of itself, I think, has dramatically shifted in the last 20 to 30 years. National and international organizations who govern fraternities and sororities have, for most of them, I should say, have really taken an active role in creating a curriculum that that not only educates members about the founding values of the organization, but about the kinds of behaviors that aren't tolerated, at least theoretically. Now, in practice, that certainly can be different from campus to campus and across organizations. But I think that education period is something that's sort of grown in the last 20 to 30 years. But I also think the emphasis from a college or university perspective on programming and activities for members. We've seen an increase in leadership programming for fraternity and sorority members. We've seen an increase in education on diversity and intercultural competence kinds of issues, education on values, et cetera. So I think there's been change in both of those areas.
Do you think it's better, Georgiana, than it was? I know that's a value judgment, but is it better? Is the process for joining better? Is membership itself better than it was when you were in your sorority?
Oh, that's a hard question.
Yeah.
You know, better in some ways, worse in others. You know, I think that I do think the system gets refined from year to year in terms of that joining process. I was fortunate. I had an amazing experience. And so I recognize that that's also unique, that not everyone has had that amazing experience. So it's hard to say that things are better per se, knowing that I went through a very organized system. I was at a small private liberal arts college, and the focus was on academics. The focus was on self-improvement. The focus was on women's empowerment. You know, so I don't think that's the standard across the board nationally.
No, and it kind of gets to what you said earlier, that each person is different, each campus is
Absolutely.
Different, each sorority is different, each fraternity is different. I want your thoughts too, Dawn, in just a few moments. We're going to carry on our conversation about Greek life on college campus in just a minute. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there. And coming up, we'll talk to a senior student at Dartmouth College about his fraternity experience. A little bit later on, we'll talk to an official at UNH about sororities and fraternities there. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Want to know what's going on this week at NHPR? Well, an easy way for you to find out is when you sign up for our e-newsletter this week at NHPR. You'll find out what The Exchange, word of mouth, and our newsroom are planning for the week and get a behind-the-scenes look at the station. Click on the Connect menu to sign up for our e-newsletter at nhpr.org. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm warning in effect for the entire state from late tomorrow morning till Friday morning. Most of the state will see accumulations from 6 to 12 inches before the storm ends Friday morning, 3 to 6 inches along the seacoast. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health. 13 locations statewide. Information at d-hdocs.org. And Jay Schwartz Design, architects and interior designers partnering with clients to create comfortable, functional, and joyful living spaces. jschwartzdesign.net. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the benefits and drawbacks of fraternities and sororities on college campuses. We're grading Greek life today in The Exchange, and we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. NHPR Exchange, that's all one word. We go now to Dartmouth College to talk to Sam Bauer. He is a senior engineering student at Dartmouth. He's a member of the Phi Delta Alpha fraternity and is on the executive board of the Intra Fraternity Council. And Samuel, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
How popular is Greek life on campus at Dartmouth, Samuel? I've heard it's pretty popular.
Yeah, it is actually pretty popular. It's something like 60% of the whole student body is actually affiliated here. So that's a pretty sizable percent.
What role does it play at Dartmouth, Samuel? 60% is a lot, so I'm guessing it plays a pretty big role in the social life.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the main social outlets here. we are kind of in a remote place, so there's not a lot of other options. So the Greek life is definitely one of the main ways that people socialize.
And as I said, Samuel, you're with the Phi Delta Alpha fraternity. Why did you choose that particular one? How do you go about deciding which house works for you and which doesn't?
Yeah, well, we actually have a policy here where you don't rush until you're a sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a pretty good chance to meet a lot of the fraternity brothers as a freshman and get to kind of figure out which one you think you like the best. So Phi Delta was the one that I met the most brothers, and I happened to like them the best, and it was the one that I ended up rushing, and it's been really great for me.
And it's interesting. We talked with our guests earlier. I don't know if you caught it, Samuel. At a lot of campuses, they don't call it rush anymore. You're supposed to make this decision more carefully than rushing. So it sounds like that's what happens at Dartmouth. Last year, as you well know, Samuel, because you've been actively involved in this, there were some really bad headlines about fraternities in particular at Dartmouth. A sorority got into trouble at one point. Two, there were, you know, rowdy parties. There was a party titled the Bloods and Crips Party, which, you know, some people said that is absolutely not the right message we want to send to our young people. What goes through your mind when you see these negative headlines? Some of these stories even ended up in the New York Times.
Yeah, it's certainly a little alarming when you hear something like that. It's definitely unfortunate because it seems like anything that's ever associated with the Greek system, and any bad publicity is automatically then pinned on the Greek system. I think that's probably due to, you know, this history of seeing the Greek system as a, you know, keggers and an animal house and all of that. So it definitely feels like everything that's bad that ever occurs around, especially at Dartmouth, is the fault of the Greek system. When it's possible that there are faults with the Greek system, certainly we're definitely working on trying to improve it here. It's something I've been working on a lot in my time here, but it seems like oftentimes it's bad decisions on the part of a few individuals, and you know, it's kind of bad circumstances that it's an easy culprit to point to when you have a Greek system at your school.
That's interesting. So, you know, if some students who lived in the dorms got in trouble, it wouldn't make as big headlines because they're not in the Greek system. There's this natural bias against fraternities. Is that what you're saying?
It seems to be that way to me. Yes, that it's easy to point your finger at the fraternities because, you know, it has this history of potentially bad behavior. You know,
how do fraternities like yours on campus, Samuel, address these issues to possibly prevent negative behavior, prevent the headlines again?
Yeah, so we've actually been taking a lot of steps in the past year or so. To try to mitigate some of these potentially issue behaviors. The Dartmouth Bystander Initiative has been a program that the school has been working pretty hard to promote, the idea being that if you can mobilize bystanders to intervene in risky situations, that you could stop a lot of sexual violence before it even begins. So something that we've been working on at the Interfraternity Council level is mandating that to be a prerequisite to rushing a fraternity. So you're going to have to have taken that kind of training before you can even join the Greek system. We also passed a bylaw in the last year or so that was, if anyone is found guilty at the college level of any sort of sexual misconduct, that they're immediately and permanently removed from the Greek system. So we've been trying to do a better job from the inside of self-adjudicating and trying to mitigate some of that behavior that's seen as definitely pretty risky and it has a negative impact on the community as a whole.
Wow. So before you can even join a fraternity, a sorority too? Do the rules apply to sororities as well,
yes,
Samuel?
Yes.
Okay.
As far as I know, that it's actually, we have a Greek leadership council that presides over the fraternity council and the Panhellenic council, and I believe that it's going to be at the Greek leadership council level as well. So it would be all Greek members of the school would have to go through that kind of training.
So before you even join, you have to go through this sexual assault awareness training. What about the drinking, Samuel? That's been a big problem. How do you see Greek organizations addressing the drinking issue, especially when we hear about just tragedies where, you know, kids aren't just drinking at parties. They're really suffering alcohol poisoning, and they've even been a couple deaths nationwide.
Well, one thing that we've been trying to do recently is we found that it's often the freshmen who come in and they're a little bit unsure of, you know, of themselves in college, and they're feeling a little self-conscious maybe, and that they tend to be the ones that have the highest risk drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So something we did in the fall this year was to basically prohibit freshmen from entering fraternity houses because that is the source of you know, they feel a little insecure when they go into the houses. Maybe they think they need to drink more than they actually do. So we instituted a policy where freshmen were actually weren't allowed to enter the fraternities for most of the first term of our year. And I think along with other efforts, we've seen some pretty good results. Since 2010, which was when I was a freshman, to this past fall, we've seen really high-risk drinking with really high-risk blood alcohol levels have dropped by like 80%. So we've actually seen the really, really risky drinking at Dartmouth has actually been on the decline pretty drastically in the last few years, which we're really excited about.
One more question for you, Sam. We focused a lot on the problems and the negatives. What are the positive aspects for you of fraternity life?
Well, personally, it's been the best advising that I've had at school came when I was a sophomore and a junior from the upperclassmen engineers in my fraternity. They were really helpful, you know, picking courses and knowing which professors I would like. And it was a support network that I don't think I would have had otherwise. It also connected me with a really diverse group of people that I maybe wouldn't have otherwise known. I came in with a pretty solid group of friends, but some of my best friends now are people that I had never met before. And I really do think that I'll be friends with them for the rest of my life. At least it seems like that when, you know, there are groups of alumni that come back that graduated in the 70s, and they're all still coming up as a group, and they still hang out, you know, 40 years later.
Oh, that's great.
That's something that I think is definitely kind of unique about fraternity life here, or Greek life in general, I suppose.
Well, Sam, it's been great to talk to you. Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Just really quickly, I guess, yeah, I mean, we are able to mobilize a really large percentage of the campus here. So, like, in the fall, we had the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth. We did a huge fundraising campaign and raised, you know, we had Greek houses competing, and we raised almost $100,000 for that.
Yeah.
So it's a network that is really can be a really positive force on the campus as well.
The community service piece of it, the charity piece.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Samuel, good luck to you this year.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Samuel Bauer, a senior engineering student at Dartmouth College, a member of the Phi Delta Alpha fraternity, and who serves on the executive board of the Intra-Fraternity Council at Dartmouth. The number for you to join our conversation is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange. All one word. And Don Forsyth, Georgiana Martin, I did want to just quickly pick up on something Samuel said and then go to our callers. Here's an email from Rod in Berwick, Maine. And he gets to something, Don, that Samuel said, lifelong friendships. Rod says, I've been in a fraternity since 1968, Phi Sigma Delta, UMass. While in college, Don says it was the spitting image of Animal House. Post-college, we have our own webpage, communicate via the web, Facebook, Twitter. We meet twice a year, Florida and on campus. We support each other individually with our professional skill sets. We support each other financially with a voluntary emergency relief fund, helping widows and families in need. Rod says, it's been an organization that has brought me an enormous amount of personal growth and opportunities. It has been experience in the world with 50 of my best friends over the past 50 years. Wow, Rod, that's great. Thank you for sharing that with us. Don, again, there's a lot of negatives, but a lot of positives there, too.
Samuel expressed it well and confirmed then by Rod in his email. That is what particularly men in their fraternity speak of, is this bonding process, which they've never before experienced until they join a fraternity. And it becomes so close-knit, and they stay with it, and it influences them for the rest of their life. It's reported by many members to be just a wonderful experience.
Let's go to our callers, and Tanya's calling from Peterborough. Hi, Tanya. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to bring up a point I haven't really heard touched on yet. I went to college in the Midwest, so typically it was the bigger schools that had the Greek system. And what I experienced was this horrible popularity contest. It wasn't just, you know, students didn't say, well, I'd like to join this fraternity, and then you're accepted. You had to go through this whole series of, you know, questions and interviews and scrutinizing, and they're looking at, you know, do you fit the image of their school? And I found it to be a horrible experience.
Because of that whole sort of you're not good enough? Is that what you're talking about,
yeah,
Tanya?
Yeah, you know, and kids come from high school where, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there can be a lot of clicks and popularity contests and all this, and, you know, maybe a lot of them are looking for a fresh start, and then they get to college and they're rejected by every, you know, sorority they want to join. I mean, that's not everybody's experience, and it wasn't, I'm not saying I was rejected, but it had that feel to it, and I didn't like it.
Sure. Tanya, thanks a lot for calling. And full disclosure, Georgiana, I did not rush in college. There were other things for me to do. But I do remember that whole social rejection piece hitting friends of mine hard. I had a couple in college who didn't get into the houses they wanted. And, you know, while I understand they can't fit everybody in, there's only so much space, it did seem sort of clicky and snobby and a very deep personal rejection. I wonder what your thoughts are there, Georgiana.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I definitely, you know, I think that is the reality of I would say fraternity and sorority system, but I think we probably see those cliques emerge more visibly among women's organizations, particularly at larger institutions. Tanya mentioned the Midwest, but the South is also notorious for that, particularly those larger institutions. And I think that exists. I think it continues to exist. And, you know, I got to be honest. I don't know what the solution to that is. I like, you know, I mentioned earlier that the research is mixed on delaying an individual's ability to join an organization, you know, to their second semester, to their sophomore year. And while the research is mixed, I completely agree with Don. I think there are a lot of benefits to delaying that. And some of that is some of the maturity factor of where individuals are when they start college, emotionally and socially and interpersonally. But I also think another part of it is just allowing individuals the opportunity to begin to form their own sense of purpose and clarify their own values. And I think one of the things that if that move is sort of pushed nationwide, I think that forces all of those organizations, particularly women's groups, to spend more time talking about the substance of the organization than being exclusive forces. And I don't know, I don't study women's behavior or cliques or anything like that, so I can't comment on that nature of it per se, but I definitely think it exists, and I think that's one of the ugly, unfortunate artifacts.
So does that continue from, you know, when I was in college, that with the sororities, you know, you just, I don't know, you just don't fit. You're not pretty enough. You're not athletic enough. You're not smart enough. Does that continue?
I think some places. But now look at what, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what five of the Panhellenic women at Dartmouth did. Just about a month or so ago, five of the sorority leaders at Dartmouth, right there in your backyard, put out essentially a memo that said, our sorority community needs to change. Our sorority community needs to push against cliques, push against the way that we feed into this alcohol culture, push against enabling men's bad behavior in fraternities, push against being exclusive, push against not creating inclusive communities for people of color and people of a variety of sexual identities. And so you had five leaders in across multiple sororities who stood up and made a very strong public statement. And certainly that was met with mixed reactions, but from an educator's perspective, that's amazing to see that there are those individuals who recognize that ugly side of it, of sorority involvement, and want to work to change it.
Tanya, thanks for the call. And let's take another one. This is Bob in Newmarket. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for taking the call. A question is this. I'm wondering, and I can think of one fraternity already who's doing something similar to this. I'm not a fraternity person myself, never have been. But I'm wondering what role mentoring might play, not at the individual institution, but sponsored by the national organizations of the Greek societies that would transcend individual campuses, but by providing mentors who are alumni from the Greek societies themselves, what kinds of impact do you think, your experts think, that might have on mitigating some of the bad behavior and the social ill consequences of Greek societies?
Okay, Bob, thanks a lot for calling in. An interesting question, Don Forsyth. What do you think?
Well, I think we're discovering now the pluses and minuses of the Greek system and trying to identify ways to reduce those minuses, and mentoring would be one of them. And it has been very effective, and it's, again, part of the general increase in regulations, trying to regulate some of the negative behaviors you sometimes see in fraternities and sororities, and mentoring is one of them. It depends on the mentor, of course. And it really depends on the national chapter as well. I mean, I've heard stories of the national chapters not yet being completely on board with the changes that need to happen across the country. Yes, I've heard that this is what we're going to say publicly, but still, we need to think about what our values are, what our history is, what our legacy is. We need to hold our ground. So you wouldn't want a mentor who comes in and has not moved forward into the next century and is still speaking of tradition, speaking of I was hazed, it's part of what we do, we've always done it, it increases our unity, you need to always remember that we need to uphold our traditions. A mentor like that would backfire, as opposed to a mentor who understands the need to change, who is more progressive, who is there to help relatively immature people, people who are just out of high school and just starting to experience the world, make good choices. So if it's an informed mentor, then that
depends
would be great.
On the person. Here's an email from Marie in Antrim, who picks up on a point that Samuel, our Dartmouth student, made. She was in a sorority. She says, my collegiate experience shows that both the Greeks and non-Greeks experience the problems today's show discusses. While I was in college in the early 80s, I always found that both non-Greek and off-campus students from other colleges came to our campus to party with the Greeks. So Marie says, it's easy to point a finger at the Greek system as the cause of alcohol and drug abuse. She says, it's clear to me that these problems occurred on our campus within both the Greek and non-Greek systems. And to you, real quick, Don, that's a point that Samuel made too, saying, look, Greeks get blamed for everything, and it's not just us. We're an easy target. What do you think, Don?
I completely agree. The Animal House as a movie did not help their cause very much. They remain very dominant and upfront in the public mind. When something bad happens, oftentimes it's traced back to that miscreant in the fraternity once again. But a lot of associations on campus engage in negative behaviors, including excessive alcohol consumption and various forms of hazing. So, you know, we had, for example, the death of Robert Champion in Florida. He was not in a fraternity.
And a point that Marie makes in her email. And we'll pick up in just a minute. Stay with us.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, pushing the boundaries of gay rights in law and sports, then a conversation with Melinda Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Franklin Pierce University, introducing their new one-year accelerated MBA that will start in the new Manchester Center this May. Information at franklinpierce.edu. And Geriatric Psychiatry Services at Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester, specializing in mental and behavioral health for people 65 and older in outpatient or inpatient settings. FrisbeeHospital.com. 940, this is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're grading Greek life on college campuses today, looking at some of the pluses and minuses on campuses nationwide and especially here in New Hampshire. Join us with your questions or comments. Were you a member of a fraternity or a sorority while you were in college? If so, what was your experience? If not, why not? And what's your opinion on the role that Greek organizations play in colleges today? The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We're going to go now to UNH to talk to Marianne Lustgraf. She's director of Memorial Union and Student Activities at UNH. She helps oversee Greek life on campus. And Marianne Lustgraf, it's good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on today.
Well, we've heard from our other guests that the percentage of students involved in Greek organizations varies widely around the country from campus to campus. How important is it at UNH?
It's actually on the upswing, and we've had several records as far as number of people going through the new member process and recruitment just this past fall. But about half a dozen years ago, it was about 6-7% of the student population, and now it's about 9.5-10%.
Oh, why? What do you suppose is behind that, Marianne?
Well, I would like to think that it's because of the partnership about half a dozen years ago that we started building through our leadership development program with the headquarters staff, the alumni, the members in the university. Just as on other campuses, Greek life was not a shining example of the best of our campus, and not all of the Greeks, of course, were doing everything wrong, but, as a public face of the university, they were being blamed for a number of things, and alums and the university town folks and members, we kind of sat down and said, okay, what are we going to do, and how are we going to change what we are about, and build into a better future. And I think that has really happened in the past half dozen years or so on this campus. Greek life academics have gone up. The number of volunteer hours has gone up. The amount that they contribute through their various philanthropies has gone up. And the students in Greek life are wearing their letters around campus where, half dozen years ago they didn't, because they got such grief from maybe professors or other people for being part of that animal house mentality, which was not accurate for everybody, but that's how the view was.
Wow, and where did that view come from, Marianne? I'm remembering some incidents about half a dozen years ago, drug busts and so forth.
You bet. And some of those things were kind of a wake-up call. It was about that time that we, like I said, when you partner with the headquarters staff and they're seeing what's going on, a lot of the headquarters closed down some of their chapters, and they've come back with a, they say they are a values-based organization, every single one of them. And so we've kind of said, okay, so what are your values, and how can we help you act upon those? And we have a very active partnership with our Greek leadership as far as the presidents of our councils, and our chapters meet once a week with the coordinator of Greek life, and as well as the regular councils meeting and that sort of thing. And it's it's looking at, okay, how do we change that perception, which is being changed, but also what standards do we have, and a whole set of standards, benchmarks that all chapters have to achieve every year was set up, and they hold themselves accountable for it.
What do those benchmarks say about hazing? That's kind of the elephant in the room, isn't it?
Well, it could be. One of the pillars that they act upon have to do, of course, with intellectual development, community service, philanthropy, risk management, and accountability, and, of course, campus and community involvement. But the biggest one, where every single one of our chapters met benchmark this year, was in membership development. And, we kind of sit down and say, run through. You don't have to run through your secret rituals with us, but run through your new member process. And we also encourage them to work with their headquarters, because headquarters don't want to be sued. They don't want to lose, have their insurance go up and that sort of thing. And if you follow the new member process put forth by your headquarters, you will never be hazing. There's just no way. It's when you start to bring in your own traditions, dangerous word, tradition, that you might be stepping over some of those things. Now, I'm not saying that other activities away from ritual and that new member process could not be considered hazing, but we work really, really closely on that type of an education. And many members of our campus from other departments work with the Greek chapters also on membership development, from wellness to academics, to all sorts of things, and trying to take some of that, well, I went through it, so you're going to go through it, mentality out of the equation.
How do you know they're not hazing, Marianne, if they don't have to reveal their secret, membership ritual?
Well, like I said, if the ritual is the real ritual that is part of their organization that goes back, it's not going to be hazing. It just isn't, because your headquarters, if you have a recognized national headquarters and that sort of thing, if you don't embellish upon it, it won't be. It's those other activities where you try and intimidate or coerce people into things that would embarrass them, in things that would make them feel unsafe, or in some way would harm them mentally, physically, emotionally. You know, you stay away from those, you're pretty good shape. But, you know, other activities, if somebody, they tell on one another or they tell on themselves, you know, and we kind of have an agreement with most of our presidents that, you know, if you've got something that you think might be sketchy, run it by us and we'll help you. We'll help you turn it into something that would meet the letter of true membership development. Now, I'm not naive. I do know that there's probably individuals that find ways to, you know, demand people wash their clothes or something like that. But in general, if the officers of the chapters find out about it, they're going to stop it because they don't want to lose their, lose their recognition, lose their
accreditation and
exactly.
Place on campus. Mm-hmm. One last very quick question for you, Marianne. This issue of when students are recruited keeps coming up this hour. There's been a lot of push-pull around this nationally. Many have said, don't recruit freshmen, at least not right off the bat when they arrive on campus. Let them settle down a little bit. Let them mature a little bit. Let them figure out who they are a little bit. When do you recruit at UNH?
We do have first year of fall recruitment, and I admit I am split on the, is that good or bad? Should they wait a year? Should they wait a semester as well? And as one of your guests stated, the research is out there, and it goes both ways. One thing though is that we have done is we have shortened the recruitment process, the Panhellenic recruitment process. So instead of being a week of parties and activities and that sort of stuff, it's really concentrated over a weekend, and a lot of the time that they might have to not spend studying or going to class and that sort of stuff is no longer a part of that process. And so there's a little less hassle or rushing around, if you will, with that type of process.
Okay.
So and we're asking them to recruit smarter. It used to be that years ago, the new member GPA was significantly lower, especially that first semester, than other members. And we've brought that up about 0.4 of a point in the past half a dozen years. So they recruit people who are maybe more academically solid and tell the others. They are starting to tell. They themselves are telling people, why don't you come back next semester and talk to us?
All right. Marianne, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne Lusgraf, again, Director of Memorial Union and Student Activities at UNH. She helps oversee Greek life on campus. You can join us with your questions, comments. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And let's go back to our listeners, if we could, Don Forsyth, Georgiana Martin, to Paul and Meredith. Hi, Paul. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me. A great show. I wanted to just tell you my story. I came from a small town, attended the primary university in the state, seeking a home, like some of your callers have mentioned. I went to a fraternity, underwent terrible hazing, witnessed during my tenure at my fraternity gang rapes, date rapes.
Yikes.
Binge drinking, ugly date night, and the list goes on and on. And my main regret is the death of the fraternity president, over drinking and dead on arrival at the regional hospital. So just a terrible experience, and very, very anti-Greek. And I do think that no matter what the administrators, townspeople, alumni try to do, when you get 50 young men together in the house, bad things are going to happen.
Well, Paul, I'm sorry you had such a terrible experience. Just real quickly, how many years ago was this?
I attended university in 1970
okay.
as a freshman.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And boy, I'd love to hear from both of you on this. I think to you first, Don, I don't want to be sexist. Everybody knows I'm the mother of two boys. But a lot of this bad behavior is coming from the fraternities, not the sororities.
Well, I think fraternities and sororities are a bit different, and we've sort of heard some discussion on how they're slightly different. I think fraternities are known for drinking. They're known for sexual assault. They're known for more violent forms of hazing. The sororities, on the other hand, are more, you know, they're cliquish, they haze in a subtle way. You know, they create the in-group and the out-group. Each sorority on each campus, everyone knows which is the best sorority, which is the worst, and students, young women come, and oftentimes they're rejected by a group as soon as they're on campus, and so it's a different sort of negative process. To me, I think of them as both forms of bullying almost. You know, there's the social bullying that you might see among girls, and then there's the physical bullying that you see among men, boys. And although I think we've heard, it's very inspiring, we've heard that the many people at these institutions are taking strong steps to eliminate the problems that fraternities cause, there's still, I think, work to be done. As Paul remarked, he had a very negative experience in a fraternity. Are those kinds of experiences a thing of the past? Are they still taking place? I mean, we still hear each week about fraternity members who are still engaged in hazing. And it's true, they capture our attention. They're highlighted, but perhaps for good reason. There's an awful lot of steps being taken to prevent hazing, and yet they're continuing to haze. Georgia, just for example, had, I believe it was 10 members of one fraternity. They were charged by the state with hazing, so it is still continuing.
What do you think, Georgiana? Again, the differences between men and women's social behaviors as exemplified by fraternities and sororities. And you know, our caller told some pretty compelling stories about back in the 70s.
Absolutely. And I think Don's right. I think those negative behaviors do still persist in spite of efforts to cull that behavior. In pockets, and I hope that it's to a lesser extent, but they still exist. I wanted to touch on something that Mary Ann mentioned, and that was the idea of recruiting smarter. I think there's a large push nationwide, and I think it could be greater with collegiate members to really focus on who they're recruiting to organizations, right? And to focus on recruiting individuals who are going to contribute positively to the organization and contribute positively to the larger community, to the campus community, to the surrounding city and state, et cetera. And I think that's an important area to focus efforts in terms of helping students understand that who you want, the image that you want your organization to portray how you want your organization to act and to be perceived is really going to depend on who the members are of your organization. So I think a push on helping members really understand what it means to recruit, individuals of strong character, individuals who are leaders or express interest in leadership, that's what I think has the potential to bring about a larger cultural shift.
All right. And let's take one more call if we could. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Thomas is up from Dover. Hi, Thomas. You're on the air. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I am the president of Phi Mu Delta at UNH. A shout out to Mary Ann. She's been so helpful in changing life at UNH. But I wanted to kind of speak about hazing and how we do it today and how we do things today. Hazing kills brotherhood, hazing kills sisterhood. And if you want to consider someone as a brother or a sister, you would never want to mistreat them in that way and abuse them. So that's why we are hugely against hazing. And also recruitment. We don't use the term rush. We don't use the term pledge. We're changing these terms because Greek life is changing. And at UNH, for Phi Mu Delta, we have recruitment week this week, and we recruit based on our values. We had a Letters to the Troops event on Monday night. We sat down and had a good discussion about veterans and our military and wrote letters to troops. Tonight, we have an alcohol awareness seminar, so we're talking about being responsible and controlling your limits. So it's very much changing, and it's not like it was in the 70s. It's extremely different, and I'm just so happy to be part of a process that's getting so much better.
Wow, that's really interesting. And it is different from, again, our caller earlier who talked about his experience in the 70s and so forth. So what do you think? I'm glad you called, Thomas, because, again, you said you're president of your fraternity at UNH. What more might be done to, you know, keep up the good work, so to speak?
Absolutely. And we have a program that Marianne was speaking about earlier called the Greek Performance and Excellence Program. And it holds us accountable of everything that we do. And having chapters be more responsible and trying to do better and almost compete against each other, because that's kind of what it does, but in a way that we're improving, in a way that we're raising more money for our philanthropies, in a way that we're doing more community service. And the best thing to do is kind of grow that positive spirit and bounce off each other and make sure that we're holding each other accountable to all the good things that we do.
All right, Thomas, good to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think we're going to let Thomas have the last word, Don and Georgiana. Don, just very quickly to you, we did hear that Greek membership is growing at UNH and other campuses because of these positive changes. I wonder what you think, looking forward, whether this is going to continue to increase.
Yeah. I think the title of our presentation, Grading Greek Life on College Campuses, I think from the 70s, as we heard, maybe they get a D minus or an S, but maybe after some of the heartening news we've heard today, I'll give them a B minus.
Okay.
Don, maybe a flat B, but a B minus.
Don, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don Forsyth, social and personality psychologist, professor at the University of Richmond's Jepson School of Leadership. Georgiana Martin, it was really nice to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Georgiana Martin, editor of Oracle, the research journal of the Association of Fraternity and Sorority Advisors, and assistant professor at the University of Southern Mississippi. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Northern New England's heroin crisis. There's been an alarming rise in heroin overdose deaths in the past few years, an equally alarming jump in crime related to the drug, and just recently growing concern over tainted heroin that's even more dangerous. We'll find out what's fueling this increase, how it's affecting our region, and different strategies states are adopting to combat it. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show next at 10 on New Hampshire Public Radio. New Hampshire weather, we have a winter storm warning in effect for the entire state from tomorrow morning till Friday morning. Most of the state will see accumulations from 6 to 12 inches before the storm ends on Friday morning, 3 to 6 inches along the seacoast. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Comcast Business, continuously investing to keep customers ahead of the technology curve. Comcast Business is built for business. More at business.comcast.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. America appears to be reaching a tipping point on gay rights. Michael Sam, a star college football player, recently spoke out about his homosexuality. His announcement before a likely NFL draft may speak to the